The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game series with the Baltimore Orioles. They were swept in that series, losing all three games. They now dropped to 7-6 on the season, and they are now currently sitting in third place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me tonight on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how's it going?
Good, bud. Really good. Happy to be back.
Yeah. Good to have you back. I'm sure there are some people out there who are familiar with your work, so be good to get you rolling again. So, also on the show with us from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how's it going?
Oh, man. Remember that Vikings coach? I don't remember his name, but he had that epic meltdown, and he's like, they were who we thought they were. Well, that's
Dennis Allen.
That's who that was, yeah. I think he just passed away recently, too, so rest his soul. But that's exactly what it is. You saw a very solid, well-balanced team built for October just totally dismantle a team that we'll be on the couch again for like the fifth time in 6 years in October. So we probably should have flipped the intros and done Jeremy last, but it is good to have you back. The longest tenured listeners will probably remember Jeremy, but I'm guessing we've grown by at least 80-85% since then. So most of you are hearing him for the first time, but you came on right at the start of that postseason in 2018, so and you've been gone for a while, but it really went all downhill after that postseason. So,
yeah, those were fun times. I noticed one thing is now you're allowing cross sport references. So,
oh, are we? Okay.
Well, you just brought in Dennis Allen from the Vikings. He always used to get mad at me, Jason. Just so, but things are different. I understand.
That's I managed fine. To squeeze one in on last week's show. So, yeah, it's loosened up a bit. Yeah.
All right. I'm a one-trick pony, unless you count NASCAR. Most people say that's not a sport. So, all right. But, yeah, so business as usual, Jason.
Yeah, so very humbling series for the Red Sox. Obviously, they got off to a good start, came home 7-3, and just got poleaxed by a much better team in the Baltimore Orioles. So, because of that, we're going to give you our bottom five lists. These are the five players who feel are most responsible for this debacle this week. So, Terry, you're in the leadoff spot. Who do we got?
We are going with Josh Winkowski, who probably received the beating of his life late in game one. Pitched 2 2/3, gave up 9 hits, 3 earned across those 2 2/3, walked 1, struck out 4. Not a guy I'm really going to destroy. I mean, he's been pretty solid and was essentially kind of being the good soldier there, because that was the day we got the news that Nick Pivetta had the flexor strain. I'm not sure if they knew Cutter Crawford would be starting the next day at that point, so they probably just wanted him to eat up some innings in case it was going to be a bullpen heavy day. But not a great outing for him. And it's interesting to me that in spring training towards the end, as they were, you know, locking things in place, Winkowski was immediately dismissed. Like, he was the first one ruled out of the rotation. So I'm not sure if, you know, Cora just lacks confidence in his makeup as a potential starter. But I still think he profiles well in the bullpen, and he's still fairly high on my trust tree, but not a good series. Not a good outing for him. And throwing, I think he threw 60 pitches as well. So kind of takes him out of it for at least probably 3 or 4 days.
Jeremy, thoughts on Winkowski?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first 2 weeks of the season have shown that the starting rotation is not the issue. And so him not making the rotation appears to be the right call. I don't worry about him long term. But it was not good. Obviously, the spotlight's on him because it's opening day. The tribute was excellent, both as to the 04 team, Wakefield, Larry Lucchino. Bayo pitched really well, despite the poor defense behind him, which I'm sure we're going to get into. To have it come unraveling like that was a tough spot. You know, so it's highlighted, but he was terrible, but it was highlighted too.
Yeah, this was alarming because this is a guy that we talked about recently. Is he's going to be so important to this team this year because your starting rotation has, you know, a lot of young arms that haven't thrown a ton of innings yet. So a guy like Winkowski who can come in and throw, you know, 40 to 50 pitches, pitch a couple of innings is going to be very important when he can piggyback guys like Cutter Crawford, guys like Garrett Whitlock who haven't pitched a ton of innings before. So for him to go out there and just get slapped around like that was very alarming. I mean, the 9 hits was, you know, that was the part that jumped out to me because he usually doesn't give up a ton of hard contact and he just, everything was getting hit. He was not missing any bats. So it's one of those I put in the small C concern category. I don't think Winkowski has all of a sudden lost it. I think he'll bounce back. He'll be okay. Baltimore just has a killer lineup as we saw, you know, this week. So that's a big part of it too. I still think Winkowski will be a big part of your bullpen going forward, but definitely a rough performance from him. And it just added to what was really a great start to opening day. And then just as it went on, just got worse and worse and worse. And the vibes just went down and down and down. So hopefully he can bounce back. Obviously it'll be a couple of days before they can use him again. That was a lot of pitches that he threw, but I imagine we'll see him this weekend in the LA series. And I think he'll bounce back just fine. So hopefully just a blip on the radar. Terry?
Totally random off of away from Winkowski. You know, the opening day thing with 04, totally appropriate, and it was a great tribute for Wakefield. But going forward, I don't want any more commemoration nights for any championship team. And, you know, because the bar is set so low, I don't want them profiting off of the days where the bar was set so high. So this is my proposal. Next opening day. Now, hear me out, Jeremy. Hear me out. Next opening day, 2025, that'll be the 10th anniversary of the last place 2015 Red Sox. Let's trot that team out. Let's trot out Robbie Ray, Pablo Sandoval, Wade Miley. A couple other awful guys that were on that last place team. And let's start commemorating them since they love trash rosters and they love the bar so low. Let's celebrate that.
All right. So for clarification purposes, you mean no more tributes this year or no more tributes like moving forward on anniversary years?
Moving forward until the bar gets set high again. Then I'm good with it. We can bring them all back and hold hands and kumbaya. Welcome back, Jeremy.
Terry, it feels like you're setting me up here because this is low-hanging fruit.
Hey,
we're not gonna celebrate championship seasons on their anniversary because you're upset about the current lineup. Are you kidding me?
This lineup is a reflection of where the bar is set. So
no, I understand the lineup stinks. Yeah. The starting pitching's okay. I don't have anything to say there yet. But your position is, let's forget about the history of the Red Sox because the current roster blows. That's the position taken.
I don't want them to trot out those great teams in front of their trash team. It's disrespectful to the team in the dugout at this point.
It seemed disrespectful to 04 as they were all hugging and celebrating.
No,
and
so yesterday, because of Wakefield, it was good. I'm
not bringing Wakefield into this. That's an outlier. That's off the table.
Yeah.
So the 04 team coming together – the tribute video as to the 04 season, in your opinion, is a deflection on ownership trying to go back 20 years and not focus. It's so ridiculous. I don't even know where to begin.
So if you're the last place team and John Henry's trotting out the guys from the glory days and saying, remember these guys? Pretty special. I don't know. I just don't want to see it.
So as somebody who really enjoys the history of all four major sports, to me, that's just absolutely ridiculous. I think you have an obligation to the alumni to show the appreciation for what they did to build the brand. 04 was the most important version of that, as I can remember, in any four major sports. It would go for a college program that's in the dumps saying, well, let's not bring back the national championship team because we stink right now. That's not how it works. Alumni are vitally important to the support of the organization, and you have to bring back your championship-level teams that have accomplished major things.
All they have to do, see my hand up here? That's just put the bar up there and I'm good with it. If the bar's down here, I'm not good with it.
It's two separate things. You want to get an ownership for where the program is right now.
Yep.
We could do like 2 hours plus on that. And I'm all for banging on Henry and ownership and everything. Some comments today from Kennedy about how Cora is going to be a part of the organization only if Breslow says it's appropriate. They have to talk and we can do a thing on that, but you can't sweep history under the rug because you're upset about the current roster. It's utterly ridiculous.
All they have to do is set the bar high.
That's Terry's position. Absolutely. That's not how it's going to work.
I'm tired of being where we're at.
Give it till
Jeremy.
To say you don't want to avoid, we won four World Series in the last 20 years and you don't want to talk about it. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
I don't.
If you're doing it on, the 13th, 12th year, and you're clearly bringing in something to deflect on the current situation, I agree with you. But if it's a 10, 20 year anniversary, come on, Terry. I mean, come on.
Now, at this point, one thing I love that's happened, at least in the last few days, is the beat writers are giving the attendance. Last night, it was only 26,000 out of 38,000 seats. So if Henry, you know, wants to just cheaply trot out a championship team just to get those seats filled because his product sucks, because he's a toxic owner who just ignores the fan base despite the billions and billions that he's worth. Yeah, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that.
Well, they are announcing attendance. I was in the car driving home tonight and the radio team did it. I assume you were watching the TV broadcast and they did it. They were about half capacity today. So
nice. You
know, it's affecting their bottom dollar. There's no way it's not. But it's opening day. It's the 20-year anniversary. Come on, Terry.
I told you I was fine with it yesterday. I was fine with it. That was my disclaimer. Going forward was the key words.
Well, for your sake, I hope that they raise the bar in the next couple of years, because you know that 07 team, they're going to trot that one out there too.
Oh, so. God.
So they better raise the bar next couple of years, because that 07 anniversary is right around the corner. So
Kurt was on that team too. So another one he'll just have to, you know, sit out.
Yeah, we'll make sure the invite gets lost in the mail for that one too.
All right, I'm gonna cross. I'm sorry, I'm supposed to raise my hand. New rule.
No, it's okay.
The Patriots Terry loves when I use other sports to reference. But like, the Patriots are an absolute dumpster fire. Take the Red Sox, put them on steroids, you got the New England Patriots. Are we supposed to forget about 20 years of Tom Brady and 6 Super Bowls because the current product stinks? It's not logical. It's ridiculous.
It hasn't been long enough yet, and you know, there's been some turnover. They have a new coach. Jeremy, it's been 6 years.
I mean, I agree with the current situation.
Jason, what do you call that? What do you call that 2021 postseason team? What do you call that?
Frauds.
Exactly.
Yeah, they were frauds.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fluke.
It was. Yeah, that was. Fluke didn't work. They had no business being 2 games from the World Series. But anyway, we made that Josh Winkowski segment pretty interesting.
Sure did. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, we'll keep things interesting, because Jeremy, you're on deck next. Who do we got coming in at number 4 on our bottom 5 list?
I believe it's Yoshida. So Yoshida for the series is 2 for 12. He had 1 RBI, one strikeout, so he's not striking out. He's not going to strike out. My problem with Yoshida is layered, okay? He's hitting in the middle of the lineup. He's hitting for absolutely no power whatsoever. He is a DH on the DH heavy team that could use that spot for somebody like Devers. He can't play the field. I don't know what I think about the player, because coming out of last year, I think there's a spot for him in baseball. I just don't think it's on the Red Sox. This roster, as we've discussed already, stinks. There's holes all over the place. As we saw tonight, we need roster flexibility, and we don't have it. You have an outfielder who can't play the outfield, and so it's just locking up the currently healthy players because no one else can slide into that role. For example, I don't exactly know what's going on with Devers. I think it's his shoulder, and I think it relates to his swing, not his throwing, but let's just say it is his throwing. You know, go slide Yoshida into the outfield, left field, and put Devers in so we at least have his bat, or however it works. It frustrates me to no end to see a guy go 2-for-12 in the middle of the lineup with absolutely no power in a series we lost 23 runs to 10. You know, it doesn't sit well with me, and I'd like to reserve my right to change my opinion in 10 days if he starts to hit, because he's going to get on base, he's going to put the ball in play, but he doesn't fit on this roster.
Terry.
So, as many in the audience know, I destroyed that signing as soon as it happened. You know, I'm all for pitching from the Asian markets. I'm very open-minded if we're going to target some of them. The Red Sox have had a long history of success. You know, you can say what you want about Matt Suzaka, but we've had some really good relievers from those markets. There has historically not been many hitters that have been very good. Ohtani is obviously a unicorn, might be the greatest baseball player ever.
He bet on baseball.
I think he might have too, but I don't know. His translator seems to be taking the fall, and he's going to plead guilty to a bunch of crap.
Can't wait to hear the details about that.
I hope they... 5 years. See, where I'm at with that, before I destroy Yoshida some more... I like Ohtani, but I hate the Dodgers more than I like Ohtani. So I'm all for chaos in that situation. So we'll see. And but anyway, getting back to Yoshida, who do you have? Shin-Soo Choo. If you want to go back over a decade and a half, you got Matsui, who was on the Yankees 09 team. I know I'm missing at least one or two more, but it's just...
Ichiro might be applicable here.
Who?
Ichiro.
He's like,
what was that?
What's the next thing down from a unicorn? All right. So
you're gonna take the outlier out of your thing to make your point? Wait, that's not what we're doing here.
It's been 20 years or so, but
it goes back to history. Oh my god, he wants it both ways, Jason.
The percentages just aren't with you if you're investing an insane amount of money on
that part. I agree with.
And how many of those players have made even half of the $90 million that Yoshida got? I don't think they weren't that big back when Matsui was playing. I guess Shin-Soo Choo got a nice deal from Texas, but it's a massive risk, and that amount of money could be smartly put towards other players that are more proven, have a better track record, and can help you out. And if you go back to the World Baseball Classic, Yoshida went off. And I'm thinking, okay, I might be eating some crow here because he looks pretty good in the WBC. Then in the first half last season, he was hitting for decent power, was putting the ball in play quite a bit. And equally as importantly, and we're not seeing it at all this year, he was drawing walks. His plate discipline looks so good. And then the second half happened, and then he got tired, and everybody's like, well, he's still jet-lagged from like 4 months ago, was a popular theory on Red Sox Twitter. And, so you're hoping, he's done this before. This is his second year. He probably knows how to get acclimated a little bit better. and he's only a DH at this point, so he should be ready to go this year. And he's rolling the balls to first and second base, and he's terrible. He's absolutely terrible. That contract, so far, you're almost approaching Pablo Sandoval level bust. God. Your whole team, he screws up your whole you know, configuration.
He's a bad spot for the roster. Okay, I've already said that, but I mean, look, I'm all for reacting, but let's not overreact. I mean, in 537 plate appearances, he had 33 doubles, 3 triples, 15 home runs, knocked in 72 on a terrible team. Right? 289 average, OPS 783, well above the league average. It doesn't matter where you come from. 783 with those numbers, you're going to be making some money. And you're going to, now, he has stunk. Okay, this year, Terry, I agree with you. I'm just saying, and like I said, I reserve my right for 10 days from now if he starts to heat up a little bit. I am extremely disappointed in his start, because you'd think having a year in the bigs, he's seen a lot of these pitchers where last year he hadn't. You'd think he'd get off to a hotter start. He's not. I don't know where are all the slicing singles to left field and in the gap and down the line. They're just not happening. Everything's a rollover ground ball to the right side of the infield. So, like, his approach needs to change. And I can't remember who's the hitting coach right now, but someone's got to get in his head. Say it again.
Peter Fatsy.
So, Peter, would you go talk to Yoshida and show him some film from last year to this year and talk about hitting the ball and working towards the middle of the field to opposite field, especially at home, where if you elevate the ball, you find the wall at 325 feet. So I get it. I'm not out like the rest of the year. He's a bad fit for the roster. Breslow's going to have to deal with it this year or next. But I'm not like ready to write the player off and say it's a bad contract. Because as of last year, I left the season thinking it was a good contract, or certainly not a terrible contract.
In the second half, he hit 254 with a 278 on base. He's been missing in action since last June. So I'm comfortable, extremely comfortable, saying that that contract is a major bust.
Well, it's 10 days into the second year. Anyways, Jason, you have anything here?
Yeah, I don't know if I can go into bust territory just yet. It is concerning that he's looking very sluggish already, like he did towards the end of last season. The weak contact is a major concern. I can't remember the last time I saw him drive a ball, like, you know, really make barrel contact. And even if he hit a deep fly out every now and then, I'd still be encouraged. Because we saw that with Devers the other night. He hit one to the triangle that in July, that ball's going out. You know, it just didn't go out because it's, you know, April and it's still cold and miserable up here. So I would even be encouraged if he started hitting line drives and he really started to make good contact, but he's not doing that. And the defense, I never thought the defense was as bad as many other people did, but when you see him go out in the field, especially now when you compare him to like Rafaela, Duran, Tyler O'Neill, he does look very unathletic out there. He just doesn't look all that coordinated or confident in himself. I know he's not a bad athlete, but he just comes off that way whenever he plays the field. So, yeah, he's kind of stuck just being the DH unless he has to go in on an emergency basis. But it's still super early. It's, you know, the weather still kind of stinks around here. So maybe he's just better when it heats up, maybe by May when he's playing consistently in 75, 80-degree weather. You know, he feels a little bit more comfortable and he shakes off the sluggishness and he gets back to what he was in the first half of last year. But right now, it's concerning just to see him, again, just looking tired already. He shouldn't be tired, especially like you mentioned, he's DHing primarily. So he doesn't even have the excuse of, you know, playing in the field all the time and that's wearing down his legs or something. All he has to do is go up there and hit. So, you know, it is early. I know it's, you know, 10 days into the season. I'm not going to overreact either. But if by middle of May, June, he still looks like this, then I don't know if it's a hitting coach thing or if it's like he needs to go see the strength conditioning coach or something, because that's where I would go at that point. So it is early, but I do hope there's a turnaround coming.
So unlike Terry's reunion take, that was a good take. Okay. The only thing I would say is that baseball is one sport where you don't have to be a good athlete to be a good baseball player. All right. So Yoshida's hand-eye contact is elite. It's one of the reasons he navigates the strike zone so well. He makes contact at a high rate, but he is not a good athlete. He runs like he has to remind himself to go left, right, left, right. And when he's out in the field, it's so mechanical. It's like he's trying to follow Tom Amansky's like rules of baseball. It's boxy. It's unathletic. I like him at the plate. I just think he's a two hitter. Shouldn't be hitting the middle of the lineup on a different team.
Yep. Well, going from Yoshida to a guy who I think is definitely a very good athlete, but hasn't quite performed to a level that we were hoping. Terry, who do we got coming in at number three on our bottom five?
We have a rookie player who was just given an 8-year deal worth $50 million. So I'm trying to get back to 2024 here. I was on 2023 to remind Jeremy exactly how long it's been since Yoshida was remotely relevant. But Rafaela did not record a hit in the series. He is a major strikeout machine. He's so bad, I got to scroll all the way down on this.
0 for 6, 4 Ks. Not
4
great.
4 Ks, yeah. How many walks has he drawn? Let's see.
On the year, I'm not sure, but none this series.
Only 2 on the year.
Ugh, only 2. Ouch. So, I'm at a loss for words.
I'm always ready to chime in, Terry, if you need a tag team partner here.
No, I'm good. I'm a singles guy. Jason's a big Chris Jericho guy, by the way. So basically, I'm a little perplexed on what the urgency was with giving him that deal based on all the prospect nerds, you know, for the last year or so have been saying Rafaela has some serious problems with pitch recognition and, you know, working the zone. And he probably should be optioned right now. I mean, he's an automatic out, and you're starting to hear a lot of JBJ comparisons. And the thing that frustrated me the most, now, again, the amount of money here is very non-consequential. It's not a lot of money over 8 years. But the thing that frustrated me the most was that reportedly he was the number one priority over the winter as far as extensions go. And you got Tristan Casas was third in all of Major League Baseball from June forward last year in OPS and has a much higher ceiling. And we're going to go either the Mookie route where we lose him, or we're going to go the Devers route where we wait till the last possible second. And then we basically have to give him a max contract. If you sign Devers 2 years earlier than you did, you're probably saving $80 to $100 million. If you're getting him right at the start of arbitration. So you look at all these weird moves or the lack of moves from the Red Sox front office, and then they prioritize Rafaela over Casas. The only reason Rafaela is up right now is because you need more right-handed balance in this lineup. You got O'Neill, which is good. Rob Refsnyder should be just, you know, your fourth outfielder, but it remains to be seen how he's going to be used. But I'm just frustrated on, you know, where this front office is. And last year when we were all screaming for Casas to get sent down so he could get right and get himself back into a rhythm, you knew eventually one way or the other, whether he got sent down or not, he was gonna figure it out. And even when he wasn't racking up hits, he was still racking up walks. So he was still working the zone and wasn't completely lost at the plate. Rafael is giving you nothing. When he gets in that batter's box, he's got no plan. He's, you know, it's a bit of a chess match, and he's just not playing that game. He doesn't draw walks, and he's an automatic out right now. And this is a team that's going to be offensively anemic.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
Thank you, Jason. So one of the themes that you're going to hear from me a lot, probably the whole season, is up the middle defense. It is as big of an issue as the back end of the lineup and Yoshida if he's in the middle of the lineup and not hitting for power. Okay? Good teams, playoff teams, play defense up the middle. This team sucks. You lose Story, it's already a problem. And one of the things I'm sure we're going to talk about is what to do with him. Move him to second, move him to short. I say absolutely not. He has to be your center fielder. You have to have that level of defense up the middle on a team that is going to hit inconsistently and probably really only hit 1 through 5, maybe 1 through 6. So I don't want to see him. I think he hit 5th on Tuesday. Like, Cora must have been drinking, because you put him in the bottom third of the lineup, you let him play defense, and you let him learn. The contract itself, once it breaks down, like, he's getting nothing for like the next 4 years. They bought out some free agency years. He's tradable. I know everyone on Twitter has been using JBJ as an example. I think it's a really good example because JBJ basically had it one October and otherwise couldn't hit. Let the kid learn and let him stabilize the defense up the middle. If it wasn't for Story getting hurt, the strength of this team might be defense up the middle once we get back, and I'm spacing it on his name in real time, Grissom. So once we get back Grissom, I think the defense up the middle with Story and Rafaela are excellent, and that's probably beyond the starting pitching, the strength of the team. Don't mess with that. Leave him in center field. Let him learn. Let's not overreact to the first 13 games of the year. He hasn't hit. I get it. He may not hit, but he's that good defensively. He is a plus-plus defender in the outfield, and he can change games with his glove, and that's something we don't have. And every time the ball's hit at Duran, in center field or left field or wherever he is, I hold my breath. That's not something you get with this player. He is going it's the exact opposite. Ball in the gap, camera pans to center field, his back is to the ball, and you feel like he's going to make the play every time. It's vitally important. If this team's going to right the ship, he has to be in the lineup, and he has to be playing elite center field.
Where did you want Grissom when you mentioned him? Where do you want him playing?
Second base?
Oh, he's going to play second base, but he's a terrible fielder. Negative 10 to 12 defensive runs saved last year.
Terry, then I walk that part of it back.
I'm just saying we're way more screwed than anyone can imagine.
Well, the truth is, Story getting hurt really just it's been brutal. I mean, I think I wrote down Hamilton goes 0-for-2 on Tuesday with an error. I mean, it's not great. And then you take Rafael out of center field, and it's all of a sudden something that could have been a moderate strength is absolutely a weakness. Duran's in center field today. He's not a good center fielder. He's a minus center fielder. The team already is inconsistent with hitting. The bullpen has been terrible, as I'm sure we're going to highlight further. But, I mean, he has to play center field. And if you pay him the money, you don't really have a choice. You got to put him out there at least for the next 2 to 3 years, at which point, if he's still not hitting, you can move on from him and try to get some value somewhere. But anyways, I think he's going to play. So we can argue about it or not. He's going to play.
Well, here's the bad news before Jason gives his take. The propaganda is growing for him to go to shortstop. Ian Brown was just mentioning it post game. I think it's going to happen. And I don't care either way, but I just think that's where it's trending.
And I've heard the same things you've heard, and I've read the same things you've read. The problem is he's already not hitting. He didn't prepare for the season at shortstop. And if you plug him in at day 13, you're setting the kid up for failure right after giving him $50 million. Like, I really, and if that's the decision that's made, I don't think it's from Cora. because Cora was a player. He was a middle infielder. He knows what it's like to prepare for a season. That's not a Cora decision if it happens. He needs to stay in center field, and he needs – and that because that's where they signed him to be. It's a panic move that I don't think they should do.
So, first of all, the contract doesn't bother me because he's making peanuts. You know, it's an escalating deal where the money goes up every single year. So, as Jeremy mentioned, these first couple of years, he's making nothing. So that part doesn't bother me. And then towards the latter part of his contract, I still think that, you know, he'll be either worth it at that point or he'll be tradable at that point. So the contract doesn't bother me. The timing of it, I agree, was odd because we all expected Bayo would get an extension at some point. They view him as their next ace. But I was surprised that he got a deal before Casas. Now, maybe that's just because maybe they're trying to lowball Casas and he's not having it. You know, maybe they tried to give him, you know, a really bad sort of, you know, early deal that he said, no, you know, I'm worth more than that. Maybe that's what's going on there. And Rafaela, who got a cup of coffee in the majors at the end of last year, they hand him an 8-year deal with a bunch of money. And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll take it. So maybe that's just how that all went down. But I agree. Like, I think he's got to stay in center field. And I know they're going to get desperate. I know Lou Maloney was saying he wants him at shortstop, and a bunch of other people are saying it now. And the thing that's driving me nuts is that people are saying, well, look what the Dodgers did. They put Mookie Betts at shortstop, and it didn't affect him. He's been having a great season. Mookie Betts has been in Major League Baseball for 11 years. He's a former MVP. He's a World Series winner. Rafaela has barely been in the majors, and you're already going to change positions on him? You know, this guy shows you that naturally he can be a great center fielder, at least defensively. And you're going to change positions because you're desperate at shortstop because you didn't do your damn job and go get insurance for Trevor Story. So now out of desperation, you're going to put this kid at shortstop and hope that it works. What if he has a Kike Hernandez type of year at shortstop? Because everyone said Kike Hernandez could play shortstop, and he kept throwing it into the dugout every time. So what if this happens with this kid? Are you going to shatter his confidence first year into his, you know, 8-year extension? I just think that'd be such a huge mistake. And I know, I like watching, you know, whoever they put in at shortstop these days has been painful, but that's their own damn fault. They should have done something about it sooner. They shouldn't have counted on Trevor Story playing 162 games. And I know that his injury was a freak injury and he was going all out and, you know, it's nothing that he could have controlled, but he's still an injury prone player. He's been injury prone pretty much his entire career. And they went into the season with, yep, you know what? Pablo Reyes, David Hamilton, we're okay with that. And now because of that, now because you're seeing that that's not working, and we'll get to those two later because I have huge concerns about that. But now because of that, you're going to force this kid to change positions 10 games into the season. I just think it's the wrong move. And I understand they've got, you know, too many outfielders at the moment, but again, also your fault. You built the roster that way. So you've got to live with that decision now. If you want Rafaela to get playing time, which he has to because you just signed him to this big extension, like you can't sign him to that deal and then send him down to AAA because he's not hitting. That sends such a bad message to him and to other guys like Casas and all these other young guys that you might want to lock up. So they're stuck. They're stuck with this. They've got to keep playing him at center, and they've just got to hope that the bat wakes up. And again, the contract, not a huge concern for me. I understand why they did it. They kind of view him as their Michael Harris III, right? He got a similar thing with Atlanta. Him and Rafael actually have very similar numbers, both in the minor leagues and in the majors. Michael Harris last year couldn't draw a walk to save his life. But the Braves believe in him. They believe in his bat, and he's off to a wicked hot start this year. So the Red Sox are sitting there hoping Rafaela can do the same. If he can cut down on the strikeouts, you know, take a few more pitches, get that plate vision up again, maybe the bat wakes up. But yeah, in terms of changing his position, I'm totally against that. Keep him in center field.
So go ahead.
I forgot to hit on the Casas versus Rafaela comparison because Casas is going to cost a lot of money. Okay, they're not going to get, and I think he has two pre-arbitration and one arbitration year, I think. So he's still 3 or 4 years away from true free agency.
No, he's 5 years. If you count this one, it's five, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. So 2-2 pre-arb and then arb. He's a power hitter. You know, he's going to be a home run RBI production guy. So it's a much different player. And so I don't think it's a fair comparison, because Cassis is going to require $100 million at this point or plus. Which brings me to my next point. And Terry told me I can't swear. So bleep ownership, because these scumbags aren't going to spend on free agents. Clear. Montgomery sat out there all year. He fired Boris today. Should have been a Red Sox, 100%. And Snell could have been a Red Sox. Come on, guys. So what they're doing is they're catering to the fans that every time they spend money, they clap. So, well, they spent money on Rafael. Like, and it's nothing against Rafael, because I don't have an opinion yet on the contract. I think the money's reasonable and everything else. But they did this, and they're saying we're doing this, and we're building to the future without having to spend for Cassis, who would have taken a significantly more money. So they're going to take significantly more time to make sure it's something they want to do. I think this is a look over here so you don't look over here situation, because they're also not spending on outside the organization free agents. So, I mean, we can go deeper into this if you want. This is supposed to be more about this series. But if you want to pan anybody about anything with the Rafaela deal, it's attack ownership for failure to spend money that's going to have an instant impact by trying to use smoke and mirrors to spend money on a future impact that's still learning the game. Because that's the problem.
Just to add to that, and I meant to mention it in my initial take, you know, they talk about wanting to lock up young talent, but extending Bayo, which was extremely necessary and even critical, and extending Rafaela are two different things. They're not the same, okay? And it doesn't – extending Rafaela, for instance, doesn't wipe away the Mookie controversy. But if you turned around and you extended Casas right now, I'd be like, okay, well, that is a step towards, you know, learning from the past and not repeating history. It's going to be the elephant in the room until they sign him. And – I just, the way the Devers thing went down, it's just, you know, it just triggers me the same way that we're going to take that tortured path again, and you're going to end up handcuffing yourself with a contract that probably could have been half or one third of what it's ultimately going to be.
Well, we don't have the benefit of knowing where the parties are at in the negotiations. Okay. So with that caveat, I'm going to say something I'm not going to say very often, Jason. I agree with Terry. Because if Cassis goes 35-120, we're boned. We are boned. Exactly. He's going to sit there and do it again next year and next year, and then we're going to have to trade him for two minor league prospects and a corner outfielder that's past his prime.
And all these prospects that we're waiting for that aren't too far away, Meyer, Anthony Teal, you're hoping they'll become what Cassis has essentially already become. So lock up
and
the guy who's
mind, Cassis started off slow last year and he's already hitting. I know the double tonight was fluky, but he's already hitting. So if he can do what he did last year without the slow start, Terry, I hate to say it, you might be right.
This is the start of a bromance, Jeremy. Just get ready for it.
We'll see about that, Terry. I get a say, so.
You're just, yeah, never mind. You'll meet Charlie eventually, and that'll be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. All right, where are we at? Where are we going next, Jason?
Well, we're going to stick with that middle infield. I kind of alluded to it there, but middle infield, obviously a huge problem. So coming in at number two on our bottom five, I'm going to group a bunch of guys together here, and I'm just going to go with Pablo Reyes, David Hamilton. I'll even throw Emmanuel Valdez in there. Those three guys – combined in this series, 1-18. So this whole idea that Trevor Story goes down with a season-ending injury and the Red Sox immediately come out and say, well, we're going to stick with our internal guys. We're not going to make a trade. We're not going to sign any free agents. We're comfortable with our internal guys. And, you know, you can include Romy Gonzalez, who he got hurt. He didn't play in the final game. whatever. That's what they're going to go with? That's like, that is so negligent on their part. And what really pisses me off is that you look at current, you know, free agents that can play shortstop. It's gross. It's not a good list. It's like Josh Harrison, our old friend Alberto Mondesi, and like Elvis Andrews, who is completely cooked. So there's no one in free agency they can bring in who's going to be any good. And they don't want to make any trades because teams know that they're desperate. So they're going to ask for a prospect that Breslow doesn't want to part with. So now we get to watch David Hamilton, Pablo Reyes, Emmanuel Valdez. We get to watch these guys for however long, try to play shortstop and second base. And Terry brought him up earlier. Vaughn Grissom, yes, he's on his way back. He sucks defensively too. The whole idea with Vaughn Grissom when we traded for him was, yeah, the glove's not there, but he's a good right-handed bat, or he should be a good right-handed bat. But the glove is terrible. I mean, he tried to play shortstop for Atlanta last year, -7 defensive runs saved. And eventually they're like, we'd rather have Arcia play shortstop every day. He didn't have quite the bat that Grissom was supposed to have, but he can at least play the position. So Vaughn Grissom is not going to save your middle infield. He might actually make it worse, at least defensively. So what are they going to do? I mean, again, if you're not going to make a move and you're going to just stick with this all year, your middle infield is going to be a joke. And what really pisses me off is when you look around the league at backup shortstops or backup infielders, the Red Sox could have had a ton of these guys. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa signed with Toronto for not much money. He's not a starter there. He's a rotational player. Could have had him. Ahmed Rosario, who, again, his bat has dropped off significantly, but he's a good glove. Signed with Tampa Bay for $1 million. You could have had that guy. You could have had Brandon Crawford, who I know is a little bit over the hill. He's 35, 36 years old, but he's always been a steady defender. Signed with the Cardinals for like $2 million. These were guys that were available late into the winter, like just before spring training. Red Sox didn't want to sign any of them. And I understand it. Trevor Story was healthy at the time. He was having a good spring. He looked like a different guy. But he's still Trevor Story. And I know, as I said before, the shoulder injury was a freak accident. And, you know, you couldn't have predicted that. But you could have predicted that Trevor Story at some point was going to miss time. Because he has his whole career. You know, whether it was the catastrophic shoulder injury or whether it's just his elbow flares up in the middle of July and he's got to go on the IL for a bit. You know, like, they should have at least planned better for that. Because we can all see it. David Hamilton is not a big leaguer. I'm sorry, he's not. I'm sure he's a great guy, but he's just a speedster and that's it. He can't hit, he can't field. Pablo Reyes is a nice little utility player, but he's the kind of guy that's going to get massively exposed if you play him too much. Romy Gonzalez couldn't even make the White Sox roster. The White Sox, who aren't even trying, said, no, we're good, we don't want this guy. And Emmanuel Valdez, we all know, he can hit, or at least he's supposed to be able to hit. He's not hitting right now, but he's a terrible defender. I mean, he looks like he doesn't know what he's doing whenever he gets a ground ball hit to him. So the fact that, like, this is what we're stuck with, and, you know, ownership, the GM, all of them just said, yeah, you know what, we're comfortable with those guys. That's pathetic. That's pathetic. That's what you're going to trot out there every single day just because one guy got hurt. A guy who usually does get hurt. They should have planned better, and they didn't. And the middle infield is going to suffer for it. The defense is going to suffer for it. And your pitching is going to suffer for it, too. Because Brian Bello, Garrett Whitlock, these are guys that rely on the ground ball. Brian Bello's looking more and more like Marcus Stroman by the day. He wants that ground ball. If your defense can't handle it, then the same thing's going to happen in what happened on opening day. Defense let him down. Red Sox lose the game. Not because of Brian Bello, but just because the defense couldn't pick him up. So get ready for more of that. If ownership just refuses to do a damn thing, then get ready for more of this. It's going to suck going forward. So, Jeremy, any thoughts on that?
Always, Jason. I don't have a problem with the building of a roster with a hole that's based on upside with an injury concern. What I have a problem with is not having the depth in place for the contingency that the injured player gets injured. I will not pretend to know your Major League Baseball level talent evaluation of middle infielders available through late winter, because that I didn't know all that. And I've also looked up Grissom, 10 errors in 65 big league games. It can't be the plan going in. Like, Trevor Story isn't going to miraculously pull a Cal Ripken Jr. and play 162. So where's the plan in the middle infield? And I'm obsessed, as we've already discussed, with defense up the middle. And if Trevor Story's there, you're strong. You're decent catching. Shortstop was going to be solidified with Story being healthy and Rafaela. But once you lose one of those guys, and like, Rafaela's probably not going to play 150 games. I'm sure he's going to get nicked at some point too, young guy. It just goes, and I'm not going to go over it again for 10 minutes. The building of the roster is absolute trash. And besides right-handed hitting, which we have none, this is the biggest issue facing the program now with Trevor Story out. And I don't care what your pitching staff is, because this pitching staff, at least in the starting pitching, is actually pretty good right now, and I hope we're going to talk about that later. You're not supporting it when you don't put guys up the middle that can catch the ball. Highlighted by the fact that Devers is your third baseman. So you already have problems at the corners. It makes no logical sense. And for a team that wants to be the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, why would you not go and spend $1 million five times and find some defensive players and fill in the depth of your organization? It's absolutely infuriating. And otherwise, I couldn't agree with your take more.
Terry.
This basically just speaks to the core of how trash this team is, because not only did Valdez, Hamilton, and Reyes make a number of defensive blunders, they were 2 for 18. You're not getting anything. They're not contributing in any way. They're just warm bodies out there taking up space. They're just being placed on a lineup card, and they're not contributing anything. And, you know, when we were talking about Rafaela for a minute, where are they? What's hurting us worse, infield defense or outfield defense?
Infield by a mile.
Infield by a mile. So that's why I can't rule out Rafaela. I think it's going to happen. And here's another thing too, and we've learned this over the last few years, bad defense is contagious. When one player, you know, starts committing errors, it just carries over to the next. The anxiety level goes up and the dysfunction increases, and you know, this is what we get, a bad product. Last year, we were the worst defensive baseball team in MLB, and we're exceeding that pace in 2024. Like, what were the priorities this winter? What were they?
Saving money.
Apparently.
Oh, remember Lackey?
Oh, yeah.
How upset he would get when they had one year they were successful and they competed, but they weren't good defensively, and he would literally like throw his glove on the ground. The strength of the team right now is the starting pitching. It's unequivocal. It's going to filter to the starting pitching. They're going to feel like they have to be perfect. And that's not the way to pitch, especially in the big leagues. So I agree with you again, second time, most ever, agreements with Terry. But I also would double down and say, we're 10 days away from pitching feeling like they have to be perfect, and it's going to go the other way with the way the pitching's been, at least in the starting rotation. It's that bad. And when Devers gets back, it gets worse.
Here's another thing too. I don't think this has been a factor so far that I'm aware of, but what starting pitcher is going to want to come to Boston with this defense? Erod actually took a shot at the Red Sox and said, I signed with Detroit because I think I'm going to have better defense behind me. And so I don't know if that's going to be a factor or not, but who would want to come here? Who would want to come here with those guys standing behind you?
Jason, you go and then I go.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to add in real quick. Yeah, Erod signed with Detroit because he had Javi Baez behind him. And, you know, everyone clowned me on Twitter for that poll, but he can defend at least. At least he knows how to play the game of baseball. So, yeah, it's a fair point. Like, the pitchers are going to get stressed. And every single inning, every single ground ball is going to be stressful for them. And that's if that's already how they're feeling in April, I mean, that's just not sustainable over 162. It's going to fall apart.
Wait, I got a proposal. This was the better way to frame it, Jason. Call up Detroit and be like, straight up, Yoshida for Baez. That was the way to frame it. Dead money for dead money, but you're getting better defense.
I suppose. Terry. I don't know if I would do that, but
Terry, come on. Would you stop with the Yoshida's dead money?
Oh my God. Where is your Yoshida tattoo? It's
I don't have currently any tattoos, and I'm not getting one of Yoshida. I'm just not ready to write him off. He had a decent rookie year.
Not his money. Really. He had a decent first half of a rookie year. That's all he had. And then baseball made him tired.
Can you take this up on May 1st? Can you give the guy to May 1st?
I'll give you till April 25th.
Terry, look, I'm not going to jump in. Go ahead, Jason.
All right. Well, with that, we'll have you jump in anyway, because we're going to shift our attention to probably the most disastrous part of this series. And most of it hinged on one guy out of that bullpen. So, Jeremy, take us home. Who's number one on our bottom five this week?
Okay, so Isaiah Campbell stinks. All right, I know he doesn't stink. He's a Major League Baseball player, but he has been absolutely atrocious. And I'm going to start broadly with the whole season. He's pitched in seven games. 6 1/3, 11 hits, 10 runs, 9 of them earned, 2 home runs, 2 walks, 5 Ks. He's got a 45 ERA. Okay, in this series, he pitched in game 2, 3 runs, 3 earned, in 16 pitches. That's tough to do. It's really tough to do in 16 pitches. You got to be in the strike zone and in the middle. Tonight, he pitched the 10th inning, so he starts with the ghost runner on second. I can accept that. But he allows 4 hits, 6 runs, 5 of them earned, with a walk and 2 home runs in 28 pitches. I know they didn't want to throw him tonight, obviously, because he pitched in the 10th. The plan was not to throw him. But he stinks. He's not giving you a chance. And if he's going to throw high leverage innings, because he replaced Cutter on Wednesday with the game in the balance, he has to be significantly better, or I'm not saying move on from him. Maybe another, we don't have a long leash. This team isn't talented. We've already talked about it, but he can't be pitching in high leverage moments. He just can't. There has to be other options. So I mean, that 10th inning was just utterly embarrassing. Balls hit hard. These aren't lucky, you know, pesky pull home runs. That ball to left center dented somebody sitting in the green monster seats. He stinks. And I don't want to see him again for at least 2 or 3. I don't want to see him in the Angels series anyways.
Terry.
So as far as the finale goes, it was either going to be him or Chase Anderson. In hindsight, it probably should have been Anderson, obviously, but those were the only two guys available. Looking back to last year, we got him in the trade. We sent Luis Urias to Seattle to get Campbell. Last year in Seattle, he actually had pretty good numbers. In how many appearances? 27. He had a 2.83 ERA, a strikeout per nine of 10.4, which is well above average. But where he struggled was walks. He gave up a ton of them. So this is only his second year in the bigs. We don't really know what he is. I agree with Jeremy. no high leverage going forward. Whoa. Well, tonight, again, we had no choice, but if we have a choice, you know, no high leverage, and he could still end up being a quality guy, but unfortunately, it's hurting us right now. And, you know, Chris Martin got tuned up. I think that was just an anomaly, but Kenley walks everybody, hasn't given up a hit, but has given up, I think, 7 walks. So this bullpen is looking a little bit more vulnerable than what I expected.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Sorry, quickly, this Slayton guy, I don't have any in-depth commentary on it, but this Slayton guy today, I at least I'm pleasantly surprised by that.
I'm wondering if he could be a starter down the line. I mean, he's multi-inning relief right now. We got him in the Rule 5 draft from Texas, so.
Has he been stretched out at all? We don't have a starter for Game 2 of the Angels series.
That's going to be Cooper Criswell, I'm fairly certain.
Sorry, Jason, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's all good. I was actually going to bring up Justin Slayton, and I was going to say I never would have thought I'd be sitting here saying that Justin Slayton is currently the only reliever that I trust in this bullpen. I know the Chris Martin thing we all want to say was an anomaly, but he was pitching differently than he has in the past. He was, you know, they talked about it on the post game that he was throwing the sinker ball and the breaking ball more than he usually does, and he didn't have either of those pitches. And, you know, I think it was Middlebrooks who brought it up. He said, this guy is a fastball cutter guy. And it got everybody out last year. And it's, you know, it's not like an electric pitch, but it works for him. And I just wonder if Andrew Bailey is already kind of getting in his head and say, oh, no, you get throw more of the sweeper and throw more of this. And it's screwing him up because he was missing his location. He was walking guys. Like, Chris Martin doesn't walk guys. And all of a sudden he just completely lost it. So he, you know, that may have been an anomaly, but it didn't look good. Kenley Jansen looks like, I mean, it's a high wire act with him every single time he goes in there. Rodriguez is what he is. Winkowski, I think, will still be okay, but he got roughed up. It's like, it's funny how it flip-flopped from last year where your bullpen was the strength and your rotation was a joke. Now your rotation is your strength and your bullpen is kind of scary right now.
I put Martin as an anomaly. I'm sure Terry wants to DFA him.
Chris, you know, Martin, today. You serious?
But it's a one off, and you know, now if he rolls them together, we'll talk in a week. But guys are allowed to have one bad outing. I liked your take on Bailey's influence on pitch selection. And I hope that's not the case with everyone. It's okay with the guys that have that club in their bag, but you know, if you're a fastball cutter guy and you're in the strike zone and you're breaking bats and you're getting weak contact, I mean, Bailey has to be smart enough not to press the issue with the way he wants guys to pitch. Also, bullpen guys, high leverage guys like Martin that are expected to throw 15 to 22 pitches, one inning at a time, they don't need to have 4 pitches. They need to go out with their best 2 and get guys out. You know, you're looking to get out, maybe face 5 guys. Like it should, if he's influencing relievers like that, I'm going to start to have a problem with it. So I could get into Kenley, but I'm not going to because he's not on the list, but I have a problem with him.
I have a feeling Kenley will be on many future lists going forward. Hopefully good, but maybe some bad too.
He's not in shape. It pisses me off. You're a professional athlete. Eat right, get in the gym, be healthy, and perform. If you show up and you're not in shape, I have absolutely no use for you. This isn't Little League. You're being paid to train and take care of your body, and he's not, and it's a problem. Now, on the flip side, Cassis looks like an absolute monster. He's starting out fast, unlike last year, and I have the inverse reaction to Cassis. I'm very excited to see what he does over 162 games with the way he's prepared his body. So that's a complete anecdote and side note.
Terry, any other thoughts before we wrap, or?
I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah, I think we're all devastated enough and traumatized enough, ready to move on from this series for sure. So with that, we will call it a show there. Keep an eye out for our series prediction show. We've got the Angels coming to Fenway for a 3-game set. So keep an eye out for that, and keep an eye out for Clown Takes making its return this week as well. So those will be available for your Friday commute and your weekend commute as well. And any other thoughts?
Clown Takes was by far the most downloaded show last week, so it's a
It
hit.
was it got off to a hot start. Yeah. So we'll continue to ride that wave of momentum with it. So enjoy your weekend, and we will talk to you all next week. Everyone, take care.